Barbara Signor, and this is my story, Uncharted Waters. One of the reasons I accepted a job in Washington, D.C., is that I did not want to work at my father's bakery anymore. My father and uncle were partners at a retail bakery that made cupcakes, pies, apple and raspberry turnovers, fig, apple and lemon squares, eclairs, coffee rolls, and that sort of thing. Drivers would order things, and we made and filled the orders. I knew I wanted to do something else, but in reality, I did not know what I wanted to do. I graduated in June 1951 from Girls Trade High School in Boston. In the summer of my graduation, I worked at Camtech Ahonte in Gloucester, Massachusetts as an assistant cook. But I just knew that if I returned to South Boston in the fall, I'd be working at the bakery. Eventually, my brother would be in charge of the family business, and that would be the rest of my life, right there. My friend Janet had gone to Washington in our senior year at school. She had an aunt who was a cook for Joseph Grew, the former ambassador to Japan. The family wanted a maid, and Janet's aunt suggested her niece for the job. Janet was the one who recommended me to the family that employed me. I had never met my employer and was employed sight unseen. She only knew me from our phone interview. When she told me that I would be paid $100 every month and would get paid every 2 weeks, I accepted. I would have my own room and bath. I would have my own half days off on Thursdays and Sundays. My new employer told me that she would be wearing a gold or yellow riding cap when we met. I told her that I would be wearing a light blue dress with a black belt and large black buttons. I took the train from South Station. This was my first time on a train and the first time I had traveled so far from home. And when I arrived in Washington, I began to see the world in a very different way because I was on my own and I had entered a different way of living. At that time, Harry Truman was the president. He lived at Blair House, across the street from the White House, because the White House itself was being remodeled. Dean Acheson was the Secretary of State, and my employer's husband worked for him. The area that I lived in was quaint. The sidewalks were a red brick, and most of the houses had black steel fences. The house had three stories. The first had a wide hall with a table near the door for the mail and three big rooms. The front room had shelves on the left wall from the floor to the ceiling, filled with books, with a window separating the shelves. The second floor had two bedrooms. The master bedroom and the guest room were there, along with the full bathroom. The third floor had one full bath and two bedrooms for the two daughters. The older girl was away at Milton Academy back in Massachusetts. The younger girl lived at home and went to school in Washington, D.C. I also used to sit for her, as the parents had to go out a few times a week. My room was at the foot of the stairs in the basement. It was small, with just a chair and a bureau and a closet, but it had a full bath. There was a window in my bedroom, and I used to smoke, so I always had my window up. I was supposed to work for the family from September until June, but when they asked me to go with them to New Hampshire for the summer, I refused. They had always been very good to me, but I didn't want to be a servant in their house forever. I knew that life just wasn't for me. Even when I lived in their house, I refused to sweep the front stairs. It was the only task I ever refused to do, and I refused to do it because the bus stop was at the front of the house, and I didn't want anyone seeing me. I had at one time thought it would be nice to join the FBI, but when I wrote and asked about the qualifications, I discovered that you had to have gone to college, and that in most cases it would be helpful if you were a lawyer or had knowledge about the law. I knew that this was not for me. But while I was in Washington, I had gone to an Army recruiter to sign up for the Army. This was when I found out, although I was 18 years of age, I still had to have my father's signature. I decided to join the Marine Corps because I wanted to escape. To go into the service was a legitimate way to leave home. You learned a trade, you got free meals, and you got paid. So I went to the courthouse on Milk Street and took my Armed Forces qualification test and passed. And then I was sworn in. I was to learn in 2 days that I needed to go to Parris Island, South Carolina. The sergeant gave me a paper for my father to sign, but I asked for another one because my father sometimes made mistakes when he wrote. He gave me the extra paper. I, of course, signed one in advance because I was not sure that my father would sign the one that I gave him. I told him the day before I left that I was going away because I had joined the Marine Corps. He knew that he had to sign a paper, and when I told him that I had already signed his name on one of the papers, he did sign the other one, which I turned into the sergeant at South Station. No one saw me out of Boston. Here I was again, going away from Boston. I was again on my own, making my own decisions. I was going to be in the Marines for 4 years, and I was heading for boot camp. World War II was over. There was a war going on in Korea, but at that time it wasn't being called a war, it was a conflict. All I can remember of my first day at Parris Island was waiting in line. And it seemed a long wait. We had to tell our name and our serial number. Somehow, I did manage to memorize it, and to this day, I can rattle it off quicker than my Social Security number. The following day, we had to see a psychologist. His question for me was, did I think I could go through boot camp? My answer to him was, if you had a father like mine, boot camp would be a cinch. After boot camp, I went home for a few days before I went to North Carolina. I saw old friends, but in my heart, I knew I had made the right choice in going away. But when I left for Cherry Point after my short leave, I discovered a different aspect of the United States. I left Boston by bus. And when I got off to transfer for the bus to Cherry Point, I went into the waiting room with my luggage. I had gone to school with colored girls at trade school. This was the term we used for African American individuals. I did not recall ever reading or being told that colored people down south were treated differently than up north. I was sitting in the waiting room when an elderly gentleman told me I could not sit here, as it was for the colored folk. He pointed out the area I was to sit in, and then I saw the signs. White only, colored only. I was red in the face. I was embarrassed, and I felt so uncomfortable. I could not believe what I had seen on those signs. I did move into the whites only waiting room, and as I recall, I was the only one there. When the bus came, I again went through another humiliating experience. Maybe humiliating is the wrong word to use. I automatically went to the back of the bus, as there was a free space there. I sat down and was told I could not sit there, as it was for colored only. At home, my friends and I always sat in the back of the bus, as you could have more fun there. I had to sit in the middle of the front of the bus. Again, I had to move. This was in the 1950s, and the girls, African American young girls, who were stationed at Cherry Point, off base, were treated as second-class citizens. Looking back at that time in my life, I think it took a little bit of courage to do what I did. Girls did not leave home unless they were going to nursing school or college or the convent. I was stepping into uncharted waters. It was a bit scary, yet at the time it was adventurous. Living down south for a few years was a big eye-opener for me as to how we in America treated people. This was America, but America I did not feel comfortable being in at that time.